Thank you, everybody. Good afternoon, good end of day. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Peter Fraser, and can everybody hear me? These the two guys who got their camera on, give me a thumbs up there. That's great. Thank you. On behalf of Wade Bedard, we'd like to welcome our clients to today's live private call hosted for your benefit with Philip Peterson. Philip is Chief Investment Strategist and Head of Capital Markets Research at Manulife Investment Management. Manulife manages more than $1 trillion in assets worldwide, serving over 28 million customers. Philip and his team have offered a steady hand, wise advice, and extreme vigilance in their diligent stewardship of other people's money, in this case, all of yours. We appreciate his leadership in this challenging hour, and I know you'll benefit from his counsel and observations on this call. Wade has assembled a series of questions that we think are most reflective of those that are asked by many of you, and he'll put those to Philip at the end of his remarks. Ladies and gentlemen, Philip Peterson.
Peter, thank you so much for having me, and Wade, appreciate the opportunity that you've afforded me today. First, just want to wish everyone a safe and healthy lockdown, I suppose is the way to put it. And I'll share with you some thoughts that myself and my team have been working through over the past, call it 8 weeks now, or probably leading into this this bear market. I'll discuss some thoughts going forward, share with you what our portfolio managers are doing, and some of the suggestions that we have for our clients. But before I go into that, I just wanted to give you my general overall view. I've been in this business 25 years. I've never seen anything like this before. That's because there's no benchmark for what we are experiencing and have lived through for the last number of weeks, and likely going to continue to live through for the next couple of weeks at least. At the same time, however, when I say that, I don't want anyone to misunderstand that as me saying this is the worst environment that we have ever seen. And that's because that's not the case. This is a compressed recession area, recession and recessionary environment. It's probably not going to last as long as other recessions. I don't believe that to be the case. And I think the recovery is probably going to be faster than other recessions. And that's what gives me confidence coming through this. And also it's because of how this recession really came about and what governments and central banks are doing to bridge this economic gap of what we are calling the Great Pause. So first, I would say, despite all the research that my team conducts, and we couldn't have predicted what is happening in the economy and markets today. This is a recession and bear market that is an entirely different making. And this is why we always preach being prepared. One of my colleagues always say, look, we can't predict risk. All we can do is manage it. And that's, I think, in this time, very, very evident that no one could have predicted what was going on. And so you have to prepare for it based on the fundamentals in front of us, and therefore be considerate to what the markets are saying. Now, I do believe that this will come to an end and we will get back to normal. And I believe that will be sooner rather than later. Now, that normal may be a little bit different in the immediate future than what we're familiar with, but we will get back to normal nonetheless. Now, that perspective is based on history. We've always been challenged and we've always survived. And then there's a little bit of hope in that as well. Now, we often say, though, myself and my team, is that hope is not an investment strategy, but neither is panic. And that's very, very key. Fear is normal. Fear in this environment is a normal response to what's going on. Fear, as we look at our account balances, is completely rational. Behavioral economics tells us that. But what we want to do, what we need to do, is keep that fear from turning into panic. We say that because panic drives us to make mistakes. Panic, and I've seen this time and time again, where investors buy at the wrong time because of panic and sell at the wrong time because of panic. Now, for example, 2 years ago, if this was 2 years ago, the number one question I was getting on events like this and client calls is, should we be buying pot stocks? And if you recall, that's when the pot stocks were all the rage and they were taking off in terms of valuation and really didn't make sense to us, but a lot of investors feared missing out and panicked and rushed in at the top of the market only to suffer losses. Just as what we saw in the fourth quarter of 2018 during that last correction, panic drove investors to sell at effectively the bottom of the market in December of 2018. So what we want to emphasize is discipline, fundamentals, and a balanced approach to investing. When we consider a balanced approach to investing, you know, as we've seen in the past, it often leads us in the right direction, protects us to the downside, and puts us in a position to recover faster than the broad market. And so that's why, you know, when as we've been going through this and entering into this market, we were preaching a little bit more defense and certainly balance. Now, let me compare this recessionary environment to recessions in the past, why it's different and why I think we're in a better position. Most recessions come as a result of an excess or a bubble in the economy or markets. For example, in 2008, there was a housing bubble in the United States that was fueled by subprime that contributed to the recession. In 2001, it was the dot-com crash that actually started in 2000, but kind of led into the recession of 2001, where companies were basically, you know, massively valued, funded, had no sense, you know, no real reason for being in operation, but other than a great name and a dot-com at the end of it. And so this is what led to the recession in 2001. If we go all the way back to the Great Depression of the 1930s, it was the same thing. We saw a buildup of manufacturing capacity in the 1920s, the roaring 20s, along with excess leverage in the financial markets that led to the crash of 29 and the economic contraction that followed. In this case, this recession has been engineered by governments in Canada and those around the world, and not by an asset bubble. And this economy has been paused by the government, and as such can be turned back on by the government to an extent. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to get right back to where we were in January and February. That's not realistic. But we will get back there. It takes a while for the economy to reaccelerate, and we'll get there. And because, again, this has been a government-engineered pause and can be a government-mandated start, that removes some of the uncertainty around what we're dealing with today. Now, the other difference between what we're seeing now versus in the past is how quickly governments and central banks have responded. And this, again, they've taken responsibility because of their actions to shut economies down. They've taken responsibilities to bridge the gap for those individuals being laid off, for those businesses that have been shut down, whether they're small, entrepreneurial, large businesses, you know, global in nature. For the Bank of Canada, for example, and this is the second, there's a two-pronged approach going on right now. You have the governments that are providing stimulus, and you have the central banks that are providing stimulus, and both are going to help and mitigate some of the damage that's been done. So when we look at what the Bank of Canada has done, the Bank of Canada has cut interest rates to 0.25%. They have basically set the market up for quantitative easing. So the Bank of Canada has basically taken on the lender of last resort status, as central banks tend to do. And they're going to remain that way through this crisis. The government of Canada, I have to give them credit, I think they've done a decent job of addressing some of the economic fallout from being stuck at home. I think there will be more to come. I think we will see that. But they have taken a do whatever it takes attitude to try and mitigate the economic sudden stop. And we've seen the same in the United States. The U.S. Congress passed $2 trillion in fiscal stimulus that was signed by President Trump. And there's more to come. And I think we will continue to see more until we do get back to normal. Now, these measures, I think, will help in the short term and help amplify the recovery in the longer term. And so, therefore, I don't think that an economic recovery is going to be as long as what we've seen in the past. For example, we had about 8.5 million jobs lost in the 2008 Great Financial Crisis, and it took 5 years to recover those jobs. Now, we've seen greater job losses already in the United States and equivalent in Canada. But I don't think it's going to take 5 years to see those jobs recovered. A lot of the job losses that we've seen have been temporary, service sector, you know, hospitality, airlines, for example. And I think what we can see is when we have this back to work order, a lot of those jobs will come back on almost immediately. I think in the first 12 months, we can see between 50 and 70% of the labor market back to where it was, with the other remaining job losses recovered in the 12 months that follow thereafter. So again, you know, I do have a little bit more confidence that this economy is going to do better. But in the meantime, the bear market has come equally fast and furious, with the volatility being quite extreme in the last few weeks are no exception. The S&P 500 hit a low of 35% off the top that was reached on February 19th. And we would say that we are now about halfway through this bear market. And that, when we say halfway through, we mean in terms of the degree to the downside, not necessarily the timing of it. That remains to be somewhat uncertain. But as we're halfway through, there are a few things that we've been taking advantage of, our portfolio managers have been taking advantage of through this time, that I would offer is ways to help avoid panic and kind of manage portfolios. Now, I'm not an advocate of saying you should always be invested all the time. I don't think that's the case. I think you do need to let fundamentals guide you. As we were coming into 2020, we did feel that the markets were fully valued to overvalued in some cases. And you know, we were a little bit more defensive. But as we've seen this correction, and given the fact that we believe that, you know, again, we've seen half of the downside, we think that, and based on what history has shown us, we're starting to see a good opportunity to, one, rebalance to our targeted asset allocation. And what I mean by that is the average Canadian investor will have 60% in equities and 40% in fixed income, or 60% stocks and 40% bonds. This has served investors very well historically over the last 50 years, and we think continues to do so. And one of the key things about being a balanced investor is rebalancing to that asset allocation in times of volatility, both to the upside and to the down. To the downside in particular, what we've seen historically with other bear markets is if you rebalance, and what I mean by that is a 60% equity position in a portfolio during a bear market drop of, say, 25% will shrink to 45% of someone's portfolio, assuming that the bonds just hold their position. So if that's the case, then what we want to do is shift from bonds or cash back into equities and bring that weight back up to 60%. And this is where historically what you see is a faster recovery. This was the case in 2008, in 2000 through 2002, back to 1973, 74. And so by rebalancing, what you are effectively doing is dollar cost averaging into the market without having to commit new capital. Now, this is something that at this level, we're very, very comfortable recommending. And in fact, our portfolio managers on behalf of our investors are doing that very same thing, where we have been readjusting our asset allocation back to our target. And in some cases, so here's the second part to it. In some cases, our portfolio managers have actually been adding to equity. So taking that benchmark of 60% and moving it closer to, say, 65, right? So we're doing it slowly, again, because we do think that potentially we could see a little bit more downside. But we're doing it on the belief, and again, based on historical data, that from these levels, 12 months out, markets tend to be positive. And so that gives us a little bit of confidence. There are some out there that think that we could see a full market recovery by the end of the year. I do not believe that, but I welcome it. I think that would be fantastic, and certainly we would all profit from that. But being realistic, it tends to take a little bit longer to recover to the prior highs, especially when the prior highs were somewhat overvalued to begin with. So the first thing we would again offer is rebalancing. We think that's key. The second thing we would suggest is that investors should take advantage, for those that are so inclined and interested in doing so, adding to equities at this point. Now, incrementally, we again believe that I don't have the ability to call a bottom. My team doesn't have the ability to call a market bottom. I don't believe anyone out there has the ability to call a market bottom correctly. Those that might call it, I think, are going to be doing so out of more luck than anything else. So with recognizing that and being a little bit more humble to our expertise there, while we see value, we're going to start staging in, right? We're going to slowly increase our equity weight to where we want it to be at some point in the future. And so we are looking at valuation across the financial sector, across the consumer sector, across the industrials. So there are great companies out there that are priced back to where they were in 2012, 2013. And we just don't think that's very realistic or justified in this environment. We think that, you know, the governments will continue to backstop companies, won't let companies completely outright fail, and we will get back to normal. So for those, again, clients that are interested, I think now is a decent time to start increasing equities. I have received the question over the last couple of weeks through the volatility saying, well, should I go to cash? Should I be selling for fear of greater downside? And we would say, no, at this point, that's not necessarily prudent. Because again, we are, what you do if you're selling now is you're locking in your losses, never to regain those. That's the challenge that we have. Not being able to call a bottom, I wouldn't know when we would be able to get back in. So I would rather suggest now, as we were defensive, is a good time to start staging into the market. And the third thing, which kind of brings those two together, that I've done in the last couple of weeks and I recommend to everyone to do is reach out to your advisors. I think you've got a great team here with Peter and Wade, and I think it's worthwhile speaking to them to ensure that you're still aligned with your goals, that you are taking advantage of some of the opportunities if you are so inclined. And there are other things beyond investments that we should consider. You know, taxation of our investments, I think, is important, especially when potentially there's some tax loss selling that can be harvested at this point. I'm not a tax expert, but these are conversations that I've had with my advisors. I can handle the investment side. What I look to them to do is handle the structure of the accounts to make sure I keep as much as I possibly can out of my gains. So those would be key things. I mean, I really wrap this all up in saying it is trying times, right? There is a lot of uncertainty right now, and being fearful is completely normal, but we shouldn't let that fear turn into panic, because that is when we make mistakes. And I've seen this time and time again, only for investors to regret it later on down the road. So why don't I pause there, and Peter and Wade, I think you do have some questions. I'd be happy to take those now.
Thank you, Philip. I've had a couple questions come in, and if anybody's on the line who wants to ask any questions, please feel free to send me an email. I'll be looking at it pretty closely over the next couple of minutes. But one question, Philip, is that you mentioned a couple times that there are certain opportunities available for buying. Is there anything in particular that stands out, any sector or any type of investment that you'd look at in particular?
Certainly. You know, we can get down to some of the individual names. I'm reluctant to do that because the markets are moving around so quickly that these opportunities can change day to day, week to week. But let me say this, you know, we look across, for example, the financial sector, and you're seeing there's been a lot of questions as to the viability of the banks and their dividends. The Canadian banks are very well run, very well diversified, and very well positioned for what we're going through right now. While they might be reluctant to increase the dividend this year, I think there's a greater reluctancy to cut the dividend. Nor do I think, I also don't think there's a need for the banks to cut the dividend. And so what you're seeing is an attractive opportunity, attractive valuation for good businesses. I think a sustainable dividend for the time being that is very worthwhile. Or if you're looking out, say 12 to 36 in terms of months or longer as an investment. Other things, you know, there's a lot of opportunities on the retail side. You know, there's some companies that, and I don't mean fashion retailers. I mean, like, for example, we're looking at Auto Collision Centers. There's a company that we own in our portfolios that is priced as if, you know, people aren't going to drive and get into accidents anymore. And well, that's just not very realistic. There's, you know, we see that airlines look very, very attractive. Their price is almost as if people will never fly again. And we don't think that's realistic either. So I would say if I had to lump it into the sectors, financials are one. Pockets within the consumer discretionary sector is another one. Industrials, I think, are quite positive. And then on the materials side, actually, this is something that we've been watching. I'm much more enthusiastic about materials, so base metals and even precious metals, than oil. Oil, I think, is going to continue to struggle through this supply overhang that we have. But when I start to look at copper and China coming back online, which will be followed by North America and Europe, you could start to see some of these materials companies do quite well.
Thank you. I have a couple questions here that kind of go hand in hand with that, so I'll ask them both at the same time. But any sectors or investments that you would avoid at this time? And likewise, are there certain countries that you see rebounding quite a bit slower than others?
Certainly, yes. And the sector and the country almost go hand in hand. So I'm going to speak in terms of broad markets here. It's the energy sector that I think could take much longer to recover. And that's not because I don't think the price of oil will go higher. I do. I think the price of oil will be higher 12 months from now. But will it be high enough? Will it be at a level where companies are again profitable? And this is the real challenge that we have. I've got oil prices today at $20 a barrel. And that's because regardless of what was agreed upon over the weekend, it's not enough to remove the excess supply in the market. Demand has dropped precipitously because people just are stuck at home. You've probably heard the same thing I have on the radio where they say, you know, don't forget to go out and start your car. You know, if you haven't driven for, you know, a couple of days or so, just to keep the battery fresh and the engine smooth. So that oil, I think, is going to continue to be a drag for the energy sector overall. That's, I think, is going to lag in the recovery. And then from a country perspective, well, the first thing you think about in terms of energy is Canada, where the TSX is still weighed or influenced by the energy sector. And so if the energy sector is going to lag, then the TSX is going to lag. Now, I mentioned the banks, so there are pockets within the TSX that are attractive, but the broad market, I think, will be weighed down by energy overall. Countries that we think could do better out of this, I think Asia is one, where you're starting to see a recovery in Asia. And the Asian markets actually have been responding to that, and they've been quite decent and are very attractively valued right now too. Then you just kind of work your way around the world. So if Asia does well, then Europe will get past this before the United States does. And I think the U.S., because they've been so late in terms of implementing containment efforts, that they're going to be the last ones out. Now, their market, I think, can do better because the many U.S. companies are more global in nature and will benefit from a quicker rebound in Asia and Europe. But you're going to want to focus, again, more on those companies that are globally oriented as opposed to domestically focused.
Thank you. Next question here. What is the biggest risk you see for markets right now?
Well, I do think we're going to retest the lows, right? I think the optimistic side of me would love to say that we've seen the bottom of this market on March 23rd, but realistically, that's not the way bear markets function. You tend to get a couple of false starts, a couple of legs up before you see, a couple of legs down. And so I think, but I'm not overly concerned with that downside. When I look 12 months out, I think one of the risks that we could see is higher interest rates and higher inflation because of all the massive amount of debt that we're going to see in the marketplace. Just take the U.S. as an example. So I mentioned the U.S. fiscal stimulus. That's great for what's going on right now. I think they need to do that. But when I look out 12 months, the U.S. is probably going to run a deficit in 2020 that is going to exceed $5 trillion. So that's a meaningful amount of net new issuance on the bond markets. And it's not just the U.S. We're going to see some of that in Canada. We're going to see it across Europe and other areas. So you're going to increase the supply of bonds. If demand doesn't move up the same way, then interest rates are going to climb. I think the logical outcome is interest rates go higher and inflation goes higher. So that, I think, can start to weigh on bonds 12 months out. Now, more government-related bonds than anything else. So that will have a little bit of impact on the market in terms of valuation, but not a great one. So I think what I'm concerned with is people in government bonds that have enjoyed a great return through this bear market as bond yields have fallen over the course of this year, assume that bonds can do that again next year and are surprised to the downside.
All right, two more questions here. And that's the last two that we'll take. But in terms of strategy for investing in this market that's obviously seen quite a bit of downside, do you have any preferred strategies that you'd recommend?
Well, sure. If we can, I'll speak to two. So the first one, I think, from a balanced approach, again, because I think that, sometimes we make these things too difficult. My grandfather was an engineer, and he always said to me, the easiest thing to do is reduce the number of parts, and therefore you reduce the number of defects, right? And so we like to sometimes overly complicate things, but a simple balanced fund often will serve us very, very well. And in fact, when I look at the balanced funds that I own, I look at them and I know I'm not getting the return of the market to the downside because, I'm balanced in my portfolio. And so that I often lead to the, it'd be like the Manulife Global Balanced Fund. So that's one that is well balanced. It's globally oriented on the equity side. It's diversified on the fixed income side. So it doesn't own a lot of government bonds. It's more high yield and investment grade, which I think looking out 12 months is well positioned for this environment. So that's the difference within the bond markets there. For investors that were looking to get into the market, but wanted to do so with some downside protection, I think that's a great place to consider. And then on the pure equity side, one that we've been including in our model portfolio, it's called the Global Thematic Opportunities Fund, the Manulife Global Thematic Opportunities Fund. What it focuses on are companies that are positioned for the coming shift, the thematic shift in the global economy over the next 10 to 20 years. And so these companies are profitable. They're not like their dot-com ideas or Ubers or fly-by-night companies that might have a great idea, but not a great business. And I think it's well positioned for what we could see in a recovery. So those two different ideas that I've been employing personally, and as well as in our model portfolio.
All right, thank you. Last question here, and then we'll send it over to Peter to wrap us up. But given all the government stimulus that you mentioned, and I think you just mentioned $5 trillion in the U.S. this year is your guess as to what that might end up being, are you worried about inflation at all?
The answer is yes. Now, to what level, though, right? I mean, when I look at it, do I think inflation back to the level that we saw in the 80s? No, I don't think that's the case. But relative to what we've seen over the last 10 years, which was very, very low inflation, sub 2% inflation, I do think that inflation could be quite a bit higher. When we model it out, we can see inflation between 3 and 4% in 2021. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but relative to bonds, and so I hinted at that, what creates the inflation? It's the monetary and fiscal stimulus that we're seeing governments employ to manage through this economic crisis. Now, I think it's prudent to do so, but there's a cost to everything. And the cost in this environment, I think, could be higher inflation and higher interest rates. To what level? I think if inflation's running between 3 and 4%, I think we could see interest rates back up to 2.5 to 3 on long bonds fairly easily.
Thank you. So if anyone has any other questions on the line, please just write them down and you can feel free to ask Peter and I at any time. But thank you, Philip, and over to you, Peter.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. We recognize that if anybody tells you they know how these present circumstances are going to end up, you should probably run and fast. But the fact is, of course, nobody knows. Nevertheless, the importance of experience, vigilance, and having a financial plan in place, may I say, has never been more important. If you do not currently have a financial plan in place, I cannot stress enough how valuable they are in times like this to help provide direction, calmness, and to make sure that all of the pieces in your financial picture are working in your favor. We'd like to hear from you if you want to begin that process now. We're grateful to Philip and his team and their devotion to us and to each of you, and especially at this time. Philip, thank you for talking with us today.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
A recording of today's proceedings will be available shortly on our website, www.pbfraser.com. This concludes our call, and thanks everybody for joining us.